I'm glad to be with you. Here's what I want to do. I want to talk to you very, very practically. I love preaching the gospel. I really, really do. But I want to help you think about how to multiply your influence in your organization, in your church, no matter what level of leadership you find yourself in. And so this is going to be multifaceted. I hope it's not too complicated. And we can make it as interactive as you want it to be. If you want to stop me in the middle and tell me to go back to something, I'll do that too. We'll treat it like a little whiteboard session. Can we do that? Right? So, who here is familiar with the telephone game? That's a rhetorical question. Right? You're familiar with that. And you played that when you were a kid. And you would whisper something in someone's ear, right? And then they would pass the message down and pass the message down and pass the message down. And by the time it gets to the end person, what do you have? Something completely different. Now, we learn so many lessons as children that we just forget. If that happened sitting in a classroom, cross-legged, crisscross applesauce, Indian style is a microaggression, if you didn't know that. Sitting crisscross applesauce, if I can say that, you can say it. Why in the world would we believe that we can play the same game with our vision, methods, and strategy related to our churches and think that it's going to magically trickle down in the telephone game? Right? But that's exactly what we do. We believe if we tell a person who will 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 tell a person, it'll get where it needs to go. And what I have found over the years of leading now Renovation Church, before that, in other contexts, I've been in full-time ministry not as long as Brian Howard. I think he's 62. I've been only going for about 15 years. What I've found over and over and over again is that no matter how well we hope, and I'm using that language on purpose, that the telephone game is going to work to disseminate our great vision that we've come down from the mountaintop with, that is going to fail us every time. I'll give an example, painful example. Renovation Church is a transcultural church. And we have been that way from the beginning. We never said we were anything different. We never communicated anything other than that. That was the vision. That was the plan. That was the strategy. All of the ends of that vision and strategy have been communicated from the pulpit, have been communicated to our group leaders, have been communicated in our members' meeting. We call our members covenant missionaries, have been communicated at every single level. Why? Because though he often says things that are not so true about the Bible, there's a good brother in Atlanta who does get leadership. And he says that vision leaks every 28 days. And so because vision leaks every 28 days, we knew that we've got to keep this in front of our people, in front of our people, in front of our people. And we thought that we were doing it well, but in reality, again, we're playing. So last fall, or two falls ago now, 2014, when all of the racial tension around police-related shootings erupted in our nation, I stood up in front of my congregation and I said, I know all of you don't understand what is happening right now, and I don't expect you to, but here's my heart and my hope as your pastor, that even though you don't understand, you would obey the word and grieve with those who grieve, weep with those who weep, mourn with those who mourn, because they are your brothers and sisters in Christ. I didn't take a position. It's online, you can hear it for yourself. I didn't say Darren Wilson was guilty and Michael Brown was a schoolboy skipping through the street with a lollipop who didn't know what was happening. I didn't take a stance. I didn't jump into the political milieu. I called Christians to stand with Christians around a vision of the gospel that was so comprehensive that surely my white brothers and sisters would mourn with me over what I was feeling related to this turmoil. It started slowly at first. 2, 3, 4, 5 people left the church. 6, 7, 8, 20, 25, 30. When it was all said and done, we lost 130 people. All white, save one Caribbean dude who didn't know he was brown, apparently. I don't know what you're talking about with this pastor. I said, yes, because you did not go up here. But you will have your run-in with the police. Yes, you will. Because they won't care about your accent. 130 people. Gone. Out of that 130 people, because we track insanely at our church. That's something you should start doing. Out of that 130 people, 40 of them were covenant members. I would say, because we think of our community in kind of concentric circles, so I would say 40 of them were covenant members. Oh, that worked. Good. Well, you know, I mean, Brian had some issues earlier, so I wasn't sure. 40 of them were covenant members. I would say another 60 to 70 regularly attended our current, were in community, were serving in strategic places. So you have 2/3 of a community who what? They got the vision. They had heard it a bunch of times. They understood that it had trickled down through the ranks, but it wasn't solidified in their hearts because the telephone game does not work. Now, let me get very, very pragmatic for a moment. Most of us have org charts that look like this. We have elders at the top, let's say 3, average size of a church. Lead pastor submitted to them. Staff. And then we're hoping, you know, vision happens up at this level, and we're hoping that that's going to translate accurately and translate accurately down through the different levels of our community. That is how we're organized. There's two problems with that, in my opinion. The first problem with that is that the more you get disconnected from the bottom or from the center of your organization, the less your strategies are actually meeting the needs of the people to whom you are leading and communicating them. That's the first problem. The second problem, as I see it, is that when we put ourselves at the top, right? When we put ourselves at the top and hope to communicate it down to the bottom, then who is the priority? Come on, guys. I know I'm not preaching right now, so I'm not expecting you to say amen, not that you would anyway. What, I know half my church is white. Y'all say amen by taking notes. It's something I've grown joyfully accustomed to, right? So, I mean that. So not only does that put us at the top, but then it also makes us the priority. And I want to give you a different paradigm. Because that then creates the dynamics that so many of us have become used to, where we then have to leverage authority in order to get traction around our vision and our mission, and by some stretch of the imagination, if you have one, our strategy, right? We have to leverage authority to make sure that everything is being communicated accurately. And it doesn't work. It doesn't work as we hope that it would. And so what we're working on right now, this is real time with Renovation Church, is inverting our org chart. And I'm going to encourage you to do the same, so that the most important people on your org chart and the ones that exist at the top are the ones you're leading and not yourselves. It will reinform how you do ministry when you put your, you know, however you're structured. So we have a board, because we're multi-site, so we have a board and then senior pastor and then multiple lead pastors. Or maybe you're just in a, you know, you're still an elder-led organization because of the size that you are. But what would happen if you put yourself at the bottom of the org chart instead of the top? How would that inform the intentionality of how you communicate, the means by which you get things done, and how well you listen to the hearts of your people to actually know if they're on board with who you are as a church? It changed everything. One example that we have, of course, from Scripture is Jesus. I like to call it Jesus versus Rome, right? How did Jesus say the kingdom was coming? Was it going to overthrow the government? Was it coming from the top down? Was it replacing the present infrastructure so that by ascending to king, as the disciples so wanted him to do, then Jesus could push his vision down through the burgeoning church? Or did it come the other way around? Did it come from the bottom up? Did Jesus topple the most powerful nation to ever exist through authority or through influence? That was not a rhetorical question. Through authority or through influence? Why would we do any different? Oh, I know we're Acts 29, yeah. Respect your elders, revere them, for they have the words of God. I'm not anti-authority. I'm pro-influence overshadowing authority. Because I believe that if we lead from a posture of influence, it will help to shape and reshape strategically and biblically better so much of what we do. And so I'll draw it just for our benefit here. If you were to imagine that who's really at the top of the org chart is your congregation. Let's just say you're a mega church. That's who's at the top of the org chart. And then your leaders. And then your elders. And you, as the lead, are at the bottom. And now the burden shifts from your hopeful trickle-down strategy to a very intentional pushing-up strategy. And now the focus has to be on how well, and I'm going to say these three things repeatedly, how well you are able to influence to the very edges of the people that you are leading. Because this can't be done lazily. This takes prayer. It takes incredible vision. It takes time. An effort that most of us, if we're honest, see as sometimes insurmountable. But if you put yourself at the bottom rather than the top, it will reframe how you do your ministry completely. It's already doing it for our church It's caused us to rethink our vision statement, to scrap our mission statement, and to hone our strategy. Because it's made us ask the question, who are we actually leading? What do they actually need? Where are we actually going? And are these people really on board? I hope that it doesn't take 130 leaving at one time, if that's even a possibility for you, before you wake up to the reality that trickle-down Primerica business models do not work. And so we have to think of it differently. A couple of thoughts, random thoughts. Influence, not authority, is the very best way to lead any organization to thriving. If you have incredible influence, you won't have to leverage inordinate authority. You won't have to. Authority is not bad, but it is twice as effective when overshadowed by influence. But I think the most important thing that I've learned in this is that authority can get results quickly, but influence creates a culture of continual growth and excellence. It's a very different thing because then there's ownership. Now, there are some challenges, and this is where we'll spend the rest of our time. I've got about 20 more minutes, and I'll be out of your way. If you want to go this way, where you put yourself at the bottom of an organizational chart versus the top, then there's a couple of hurdles that you're going to face. The first one to consider is how you're going to communicate. This is where we get down to the nitty-gritty. How you're going to communicate. Now, I'm not going to get too deeply into this because Brother Quan is coming up to talk about vision, but I will say this, that if your vision statement is too long and too complicated to tweet, then it's not good. It's not good. The Lou Gehrig Foundation, fighting Lou Gehrig's disease, what do you think their vision statement is? A world without Lou Gehrig's disease. That is something to wake up and fight for every day. That informs everything that they do. If you are going to invert your org chart and put the burden of pushing vision up on yourself and your leaders rather than hoping that it will trickle down, then you have to have a vision that is simple, portable, repeatable, simple, portable, repeatable. It has to be that way. And above all else, aspirational. And above all else, aspirational. Something that cannot be accomplished in a weekend, something that cannot be accomplished in a sermon series, something that cannot be accomplished in a shift of focus, something that can be communicated simply and effectively. Why? Because when you got to push it up, rather than hope that it trickles down, then you've got to depend on people who are not eating, drinking, and breathing your church 24 hours a day to carry that vision as their own. Now, that's the misconception we live under, though. I'm speaking to myself. I go and craft this 17-word, word-smithed, rhyming at some places, alliterated at others, because you know that's important. In a good vision statement, you gotta have at least a series of three C's. And nobody can even repeat it back to me once. They're not chewing on that all day. We come out of the closet with our brilliant ideas. These people are trying to figure out how to stay married and whether they wanna go to work or not. We have any lay leaders here? That's that real, right? You trying to figure out life. You ain't living, breathing church all day long. But we would think that way if we had to push it up rather than hoping it would trickle down. You see how this works together? A vision that is portable, repeatable, simple, aspirational. A world without Lou Gehrig's disease. You also need to have a measurable strategy. A measurable, oh yeah, I know. I know. God's sovereign, so he will do what he will. Well, then why do you study to preach? Why do you open commentaries? I mean, I'm just, can I challenge us a little bit here? We treat sovereignty with convenience. We put our energy into the things that we like doing and all that other stuff. We just hope it'll happen. Do you have a measurable strategy for how you are accomplishing what you want to see happen through the life of your church? Is it measurable? Is it actually measurable? Again, why? Because if the burden is for you to push it up, then you've got to have a way to look in and see if you're actually accomplishing what it is that you desire to accomplish as a church. So not only does your vision have to be simple and portable, repeatable and aspirational, but your strategy, and I hope you have one, has to be measurable. I was telling a brother earlier, vision unites, right? But strategy is what divides, because strategy is what carves out your particular contribution to this era of God's work and will. It is what sets you apart. It is what helps you to focus on what is going to energize your ministry. And in order to communicate effectively, you've got to have one. And lastly, you've got to have a definable means of existence. A definable means of existence. That is architecting around the why. Do you know why you are doing what you are doing? And I don't mean in some ethereal sense. I don't mean because the burden of God was burning in my heart. Okay, yes. Understandable. But is there a why connected to a vision and a strategy that continues to energize your effort? Or are we caught in the cycle of Franken ministry? That means you go to a conference, you read a book, you hear a podcast, you grab three different pieces and you try to put it together to form your why. Well, that's not your why. That's part of somebody else's why, part of somebody else's why, part of somebody else's why that you have mashed up into a Franken ministry. You pray for 10 minutes and then go, it's alive. And then you hope it'll trickle down. I'm trying. What is your why? These are hard questions. What is your why? Because there are brothers in our network and brothers out of our network who have planted churches out of impulses that have no why attached. And it's why they don't last. And you will not last unless you architect around the why. And you will not effectively communicate up through your organization. And you will not live toward and into that portable, repeatable, simple, aspirational vision that I know you're going to go back and craft when you leave here, because you're going to be thinking, I can't tweet this, so surely it's not clear enough. So, from the bottom, the first challenge is how to communicate. Second challenge is how to get things done. How do you get things done when you can't just leverage the authority of your role? How do you get things done? Well, there's a couple simple principles I want to share with you. The first is pretty self-evident. You assign responsibilities and not tasks. Nobody is going to own what you've asked if they're simply an outworking of your desires. You can't just assign tasks. You gotta assign responsibilities. That creates ownership. And ownership is the way that you get things done, because that creates multiplication, not only of energy and effort, but of DNA. and influence. So you assign responsibilities and not tasks, and you have to stand by it. This is the hardest part, specifically for type A lead pastors, because nobody can do it like you can do it, right? Nobody. Nobody can preach like I can. Nobody can lead a small group conversation like I can. Nobody can set up this chair like I can, right? No, can we be honest, though? Who's still doing setup and tear down? You go by and straighten them chairs after they get set up, don't you? Yeah, you do. Thank you for being honest. The rest of these people, they hanging with the devil. Lying through their teeth. Of course you do. I spent Sunday. Listen, I'm trying to help you guys very practically. I don't want to hurt you. I spent Sundays knowing I should have been praying over my message when we were still doing setup and tear down, but I'm in the auditorium straightening every chair just how I like it. Because nobody can do it like you. Well, as long as you think that way, nobody will do it but you. Did you hear what I said? Nobody will do it but you. Because the very best leaders, which are the people that we want, will not fly under a low ceiling. They're not going to do it. They're going to look for room where they can actually grow and expand. And no, it's not going to get done how you like it 100% of the time. Absolutely not. Sometimes not even 50% of the time. But they will take ownership of it, and they will multiply your influence through their efforts. Now, when you give us responsibilities and not tasks, guess what that requires of you as a leader? That you be a developer. That means that you've got to have a clear system of review and clear, measurables for quality control. So what is the threshold? What is your threshold of acceptable failure? Because that is the only way that you're going to multiply leaders, which will multiply your influence, which will allow you to push vision and mission and strategy up when you invert your org chart. All of this is building on top of each other. So what is your acceptable threshold of failure? How good does a guy got to be to preach in your pulpit? Well, if it's got to be Tim Keller and you not even Tim Keller, then you will be preaching 52 Sundays a year for 3 years until you burn out and go into another field. Because I've seen it 1,000 times. That's just one example. What is the threshold? What is your review process for quality control? What is your review process, period, for performance? Somewhere we got grace and acceptable laziness mixed up in leadership. Right? Why does church not have to be excellent and executed well? That means you review people's work and you help them grow, because it's helping them beyond the world and the context in which you are leading them in that particular environment. And so it requires a frequent review and coaching process. I'll give you our example. We do something called 60 by 6. 60 by 6 at every level for every person who works above me. Okay, so language shapes culture, right? So every person who works above me, we do 60 by 6 at every level. And that's every 60 days, so it happens, I believe, about 6 times a year. We just ask 3 questions. What have you done in the last 60 days to move the mission forward in your particular area of responsibility? What will you be doing in the next 60 days to move the mission forward in your particular area of responsibility? Not task, responsibility. And what resources do you need from your director in order to accomplish those things. It's a real-time review so that at the end of the year, when we do an end-of-the-year review, we're not trying to cram in a year's worth of data into one conversation where we cannot accurately assess whether someone has really leaned and lived into the vision in their area of responsibility in our organization, in our church. 60 by 6, it's a beautiful, effective thing. And then the last piece, and this is my favorite, and I stand by this as well. We created a box. And within that box, you can do anything you want, right? So here's what I tell my guys and gals. Here's the box. Vision is on the top. Philosophy, which we don't even have time to get into right now, philosophy of ministry. Strategy. Vision, philosophy, strategy, and values. Within that box, if you are employed by Renovation Church or a volunteer lay leader at Renovation Church, within that box, you have carte blanche to do whatever you want. And if I have to come into your box, then one of two things is wrong, and they're both my fault. If I have to come into your box, it's because I have not adequately trained you to execute your responsibilities. If I have to come into your box, it is because I have hired you either in the wrong role or you are the wrong person. But either way, it is not your fault. It is my fault. And then it is incumbent upon me to help you to correct that. Yeah, that guy goes to my church. Anyway. So, how do you get things done? You assign responsibilities, not tasks. You create a clear and measurable quality control standard and a clear review process and clear lanes for people to run in. The number one thing people want from the people who are leading them is consistency and clarity. That's it. That's what people want, for you to be consistent. Even if you're consistently bad, at least they don't have any surprises, right? Consistency and clarity. Last thing here on this section. Actually, I've already talked about it. Oh, no, here we go. The last thing is to celebrate clearly and visibly. Successful execution of your strategy and living into your vision. Thanks, Hunter. Because we have a convenient sovereignty, we don't celebrate very well. We don't celebrate very well because God was going to do it or God didn't do it. We don't celebrate very well. We don't live with expectation. And so because of that, people who are executing our vision well, who are living into that, who are executing the strategy well, they have no motivation to continue to do so. Other than internal and eternal motivation, which you hope for. But I've found it invaluable from the top, you know, the first-time guest, to the bottom, our board, to celebrate when we see people executing the heart of our vision in simple ways. Simple, simple ways. So our pastoral care assistant recently, on her own, found some linguistic inconsistencies in how we were communicating pastoral care related to our vision. She went in, she changed that. She got a bunch of things reprinted quietly. She didn't ask for any acknowledgement. But at our staff meeting, we celebrated her. We rejoiced that she guarded the vision and understood what it meant to have to continue to push that up. We celebrate our group leaders when we see them making strategic decisions so that their groups are not monocultural and monoethnic. Why? Because we are a transcultural church. We celebrate our teachers and our communicators when they, in the course of faithfully preaching a text and exposing all the beautiful truths there, make a beeline to apply that to the transcultural narrative of the gospel. We celebrate those things because what gets celebrated gets repeated every single time. Lastly, and this is probably one of the most complicated pieces, how do you learn to listen when you're at the bottom? How do you learn to listen when you're at the bottom? Because the truth is, and particularly if you're a lead pastor here, nobody wants to give you bad news, right? So, hey, man, how you doing? Oh, I'm great. How you think things went today? It was great. You preached so long. That's what they're thinking. But they're not going to tell you that. They're not going to tell you that. The higher up people are in your organization, the less likely it is that you're going to get clear and accurate information on how you can improve. It's just real life. The higher up people are, again, you notice the inverted language, because we're at the bottom as the leaders. We are down through the middle and at the bottom. So the higher up people are in your organization, the less likely it is that you're going to get clear and accurate information on how you can improve. So we do this three ways. Number one, we have informal feedback loops. Informal feedback loops. So there are a couple of key lay people and volunteers that we will put in different environments who have no dog in the hunt and will come back and tell us how well that was executed, if it was in line with who we are theologically, which is a tipping point sometimes, if the vision was communicated excellently, if there were some pieces missing. So we have informal feedback loops. One recent example, we have two buses because we're in the city, so we have to transport people from an off-site parking lot, to our building, and one of our informal feedback people came and said, Pastor, the buses are filthy. I hate for that to be our first impression to a guest. Now, the guy over facilities, he had missed that. His assistant didn't want to mention it because he didn't want to overstep his boss's position, quote unquote. And so we were able to figure out that we were leaving a terrible first impression. Sometimes I'm that informal feedback loop. I don't know if you do this. I got this from Larry Osborne. On Sundays that I'm not preaching, I come late and I leave early because I want to know what that's like. How am I going to be treated when nobody's expecting me? Is it easy to find the building? Is parking accessible? Is there someone greeting me when I enter kids ministry? Because these are all values that are part of Life of Renovation Church. It's amazing when I walk down to kids ministry how efficient things suddenly become, right? But if they knew I was coming or if they knew I was asking, I would never get to see those holes. And then the last thing I do personally as a senior leader, and so I'm talking specifically to senior leaders, and I got this from the former CEO of Home Depot. He did something called skip lunches, where basically he would find people at the top of the organization. So that would be a clerk working the cash register, and he would take them to lunch. And he would ask them very candid questions about their experience working for the Home Depot and about how they were being led and about if the vision and the strategy and the values were being pushed up to that level. And the only promise that he made, which I thought was very, very healthy, was that there would be no reprimand unless necessary. And he said he only ever had to fire one supervisor over something that he found out in that skip lunch. But that skip lunch kept him connected to the top of the organization rather than inculcated in his leadership position. And so here's what I want to encourage you to do. If you want to multiply your influence in your church, which is what I hope you want to do, not just lead through authority because you're the pastor or one of the elders or one of the leaders, that you wouldn't be a position but a person, right? Put yourself as far down in the org chart as you would naturally go. And if you're the senior leader, that means you're at the bottom. And when you're at the bottom and you have to very prayerfully and very intentionally push things to the top, then it will change so much about how you not only interact with the people you lead, but even how you think about the life and the future of the church that you're leading and the impact that it can have. It has changed things significantly for us. And it's a whole new way, because now I can't hope that I say it well from the stage and that it's going to make its way down into our community. I have to sit back and really think, how am I going to communicate this? How am I going to get things done? How am I going to hear accurate information on where we need to improve? And that is what should be occupying a great deal of your time. That's all I got. I'm done.